One's rifles, the next is rocket launchers and grenades. Daniel laughed, then caught his brother's expression. Wait, really? She likes preparation. I like to be extremely well-armed. Okay, now this one I couldn't hide so well, and anyway, it's the kind of thing I might need quickly.
Kevin walked around the side of the massive hay tower, and they followed. The tarp hung to the ground on this side. She was pretty confident she knew at least the category of what he was hiding here, and sure enough, he lifted the tarp to reveal a cozy garage behind the hay, with a very large vehicle wedged inside. From the way he stood, it was obviously his pride and joy.
There's a truck back at the ranch that blends in, but this is here in case of emergencies.
Daniel made a small noise like a hiccup. Alex glanced at him and realized he was trying not to laugh. She got the joke immediately. They had both dealt with DC traffic for years, though he more recently. And despite the congestion and tight parking options that were more suited for a Vespa than a medium-sized sedan, there was always that one guy trying to shove his gigantic compensation mobile into a parallel slot. As if anyone needed a Hummer anywhere, let alone in the city. You might as well just get a vanity plate that read D-bag and be done with it. When Daniel saw her mouth twitch, he lost his own control. Suddenly he was snorting with laughter. It was an awkward, infectious snort that was much funnier than the military monster truck. She started chortling along, surprised at how out of control the laughter felt almost immediately. She hadn't laughed big like this in so long. She'd forgotten how it grabbed your whole body and wouldn't let go. Daniel had one hand on the hay while he bent over, the other hand on his side like he had a stitch. It was the funniest thing she'd ever seen.
What? Kevin demanded. What?
Daniel tried to calm himself to answer, but then a sudden burst of giggles from Alex derailed him, and he guffawed again, gasping for air between outbursts.
This is a state-of-the-art assault vehicle, Kevin complained, half shouting to be heard over the frenzied hilarity. It has solid rubber tires and missile-proof glass. There are panels through the whole body that a tank can't crush. This thing could save your life.
He was just making it worse. Tears streamed down both their faces. Alex's lip was protesting and her cheeks ached. Daniel was hiccuping for real now, unable to straighten up. Kevin threw up his hands in disgust and stomped away from them. They busted up again. Finally, several long minutes after Kevin had disappeared, Alex started to be able to breathe. Daniel's laughter was trailing off as well, though he was still holding his side. She could sympathize. She had a cramp, too. Oddly exhausted, she sat down on the hay-strewn floor and put her head between her knees, working to even out her breathing. After a second, she felt Daniel settle next to her. His hand came to rest lightly on her back.
Ah, I needed that, he sighed. It was starting to feel like nothing would ever be really funny again.
I can't remember the last time I laughed like that. My stomach hurts.
Mine too.
And then he laughed another,
Don't start, she begged. Sorry, I'll try. I might be a little hysterical.
Huh. Maybe we should slap each other. He laughed another burst, and she couldn't help but giggle.
Stop, she moaned. Should we talk about sad things? He wondered.
Like living a life of isolation and fear, hunted every minute of the day? She suggested. It felt like the murky barn got even darker, and she immediately regretted speaking. Even if it hurt, it had felt so nice to laugh.
That's a good one, Daniel said quietly. How about letting down all the people who count on you?
Doesn't really apply for me, but it's definitely a depressing idea. Though in your case, I doubt anyone will look at it that way. They'll probably think you've been murdered. Everyone will be heartbroken and they'll leave flowers and candles in front of the school marquee.
Do you think they will?
Sure. There will probably even be teddy bears.
Maybe. Or maybe no one will miss me. Maybe they'll say, Finally, we got rid of that joker, and now we can hire a real history teacher. The girls' volleyball team might actually have a chance with him out of the way. You know what? Let's just find a chimp to do his job and put a salary into the retirement fund.
She nodded with false gravity.
You could be right.
He smiled, then was serious again. Did anyone burn candles for you? There wasn't really anyone left to care. If Barnaby had been the one to survive, he might have lit a candle for me. I did a few times for him, in cathedrals. I'm not Catholic, but I couldn't figure out another place where I could do it inconspicuously. I know Barnaby's not around to care, but I needed something. Closure, mourning, whatever. A pause.
Did you love him?
Yes. Aside from my work, and you've seen how warm and cuddly that was, he was all I had. Daniel nodded. Well, I don't feel like laughing anymore. We probably needed the release. Now we can get back to our regularly scheduled depression.
Sounds lovely.
Hey, Mo and Curly, Kevin called from outside the barn. Are you ready to get back to work, or do you want to giggle like schoolgirls a little while longer?
Giggle, I guess,
Daniel called back. She couldn't help it. She snickered. Daniel put his hand gently over her bruised mouth.
None of that now. We'd better go see what work there is to do.
Chapter 13. Kevin kept a firing range set up behind the barn, facing the river. Alex eyed it suspiciously, but she had to concede that random gunshots were probably less likely to arouse attention in rural Texas than anywhere else in the world.
When's the last time you picked up a gun?
He asked Daniel.
With Dad, I guess.
Seriously?
Kevin heaved a sigh.
Well, I suppose all we can do is help you remember something.
He brought out an array of weapons and laid them on a hay bale. Other hay bales, each stacked to a man's height and wearing printed black silhouettes, were arranged at varying distances from their position. Some were so far off she could barely make them out.
We can start with the handguns, but what I'd like is to try you on some rifles. The best way to stay safe is to be shooting from very, very far away. I'd rather keep you out of the close-up stuff if I can.
These don't look like any rifles I've ever used, Daniel said.
They're snipers. This one.
He patted the Macmillan he wore slung across his back.
Has a record for the longest distance kill at over 1 mile.
Daniel's eyes widened in disbelief.
How do you even know who you want to kill from that far away?
Spotters. But don't worry about that. You don't need to learn that kind of distance. I just want you to be able to sit in a perch and pick people off if it comes to that.
I don't even know if I could actually shoot a person.
It was Kevin's turn to look disbelieving.
You'd better figure that out, because if you don't shoot, the person coming sure as hell won't hesitate to take advantage.
Daniel seemed about to argue, but Kevin waved the mini-conflict away.
Look, let's just see if you can remember how to shoot a gun.
After Kevin reviewed the basics, it was evident that Daniel did remember plenty. He took to the rifle with much more instinctive ease than Alex had ever felt with firearms. He was clearly a natural, while she never had been. After enough rounds were fired for her to get over the fear of all the noise, she lifted the Sig Sauer. Hey, do you mind if I try this out on the closer targets?
Sure,
Kevin said, not looking up from his brother's sightline.
Join the party.
The Sig was heavier than her PPK and had a more substantial kick, but in a way that felt good, powerful. It took her a few rounds to get used to the sight, but then she was about as accurate with it as she was with her own gun. She thought that with time, she would get better. Maybe she'd be able to get in some consistent practice while she was here. It wasn't the kind of thing she usually got to indulge in. When Kevin put an end to the shooting instruction, the sun was almost all the way down. It colored all the yellow grass deep red, as if it were actually touching down on the horizon and setting all the dried brush ablaze. Reluctantly, she put the Sig away with the other guns. It wasn't as if she didn't know the code. She might do some stocking up when Kevin's party was over.
Well, Danny, it's good to see you've still got it, and that my talent isn't just a fluke. Mom and Dad passed us some solid genes,
Kevin said when they were heading back to the house.
For target practice, I still don't think I could do what you do.
Kevin snorted.
Things change when someone is trying to kill you.
Daniel looked out his side window, clearly unconvinced.
Okay,
Kevin sighed.
Think of it this way. Imagine someone you want to protect. Mom, for example, is standing behind you. Some new recruits need to visualize in order to get themselves in the right frame of mind.
That doesn't really fit with shooting from a sniper's perch, Daniel pointed out.
Then picture Mom getting stuffed into the trunk of a car by the guy in your crosshairs. Use your imagination.
Daniel was done.
Fine, fine.
She could tell he still wasn't persuaded, but she had to agree with Kevin on this one topic. When someone came for you, your survival instincts kicked in. In a him or you situation, you always chose yourself. Daniel wouldn't know how that felt until the hunters caught up with him. She hoped he'd never have to learn the feeling. Well, Kevin would do what he could, and so would she. Maybe together they could make the world a safer place for Daniel Beach. Back at the ranch, the tour continued. Kevin took them to a sleek, modern outbuilding, invisible from the front of the house and full of dogs. Each animal had a climate-controlled stall and access to its own private outdoor run. Kevin explained the exercise schedule to Daniel, which dogs were already spoken for and which were ready to be listed, training him for his future life at the ranch, she assumed. Daniel seemed to love it, petting all the dogs and learning their names. The dogs adored the attention and asked for it. She wished she could turn down the volume of the barks and whines. The dogs who ran loose were apparently graduates of the program. These followed Kevin on the rounds. Alex suspected Kevin had let her tag along just to make her uncomfortable. The horse-sized spotted one, a Great Dane, she learned, was constantly on her heels, and she was sure the dog hadn't decided to do that on his own. Kevin must have given some unseen command. She could feel the giant's breath on the nape of her neck and guessed there were probably flecks of saliva on the back of her shirt. The hound dog was tailing her, too, but she thought he might have chosen the assignment for himself. He was still milking those sad eyes every time Alex glanced at him. The other graduates circled Daniel and Kevin, except for Einstein, who stuck close to Kevin only and seemed to take troop inspections very seriously. They passed stalls with German Shepherds, Dobermans, Rottweilers, and several other working group dogs she didn't know names for. Alex kept to the middle of the long pathway between kennels and didn't touch anything. Always best to minimize the number of fingerprints for wiping down later. There were two small hound puppies sharing a stall, and Kevin mentioned to Daniel that they were Lola's offspring, gesturing to the bloodhound tailing Alex.
Oh, Lola, huh? Sorry, Alex murmured, too low for the men to hear.
I shouldn't have assumed. Lola appeared to know she was being addressed. She stared up at Alex hopefully, and her tail pounded against Alex's leg. Alex leaned down quickly to pat her on the head. Kevin made a disgusted sound, and she straightened up to see him staring at her.
Lola likes everyone, Kevin said to Daniel. Great nose, poor taste. I'm trying to breed out the lack of discrimination while keeping the olfactory genius.
Daniel shook his head.
Enough already. I'm not kidding. I expect better instincts from these animals.
Alex squatted to scrub her fingers along Lola's side, like she'd seen Daniel do, knowing it would drive Kevin crazy. Lola immediately rolled over, offering her belly. Abruptly, the giant dog lay down on Alex's other side, and she was nearly positive he was also looking hopeful. She carefully patted his shoulder with one hand, and he didn't bite it off. His tail beat the ground twice. She took that as encouragement and scratched behind his ears.
Come on, Con! Not you two!
Both Alex and the Great Dane ignored him. She twisted down so that she was sitting cross-legged with both dogs in view and her back to the brothers. If she was going to be surrounded by furry killing machines, she might as well have a few of them on her side. Lola licked the back of her hand. It was disgusting, but also kind of sweet.
Looks like Alex has a fan, Daniel said. Whatever. Over here's where we keep the chow. Arnie picks it up every other week in Lawton. We've got most of what we need for...
The rest of what Kevin said was lost in the yips and grumbles of the dogs left behind. She stroked the dogs for a few minutes more, not sure how they would take it when she quit. Finally, she rose cautiously to her feet. Both Lola and Con were quickly on all fours and seemed totally happy to follow her as she walked back to the house. They escorted her right to the door and then made themselves comfortable on the porch. Good girl. Good boy, she said, as she went inside. Kevin had probably meant to intimidate her, but she liked the way it felt, as if the dogs were actually looking out for her, rather than keeping an eye on her. She supposed it was what they were trained for. It was a comfortable feeling. If she'd had a different lifestyle, it might be nice to add a dog. Except, she didn't know where she would get a dog-sized gas mask. Arnie was on the couch in the great room, parked in front of a flat-screen TV that was mounted on the opposite wall. He had a microwave dinner in his lap to which he was assiduously applying himself. He didn't react to her entrance. The smell of the food, macaroni and Salisbury steak, had her mouth watering. Not a four-star meal, but she was really hungry. Do you mind if I help myself to some food? She asked. Arnie grunted without looking away from the baseball game. She hoped it wasn't affirmative because she was already en route to the fridge. The refrigerator, an impressive double-wide stainless steel affair, was crushingly bare. Condiments, a few sports drinks, and a supersized jar of pickles. It also needed to be cleaned. She checked the freezer drawer and there found pay dirt. It was stuffed full of dinners like the one Arnie was eating. She heated a cheese pizza in the microwave and ate it on a bar stool scooted up to the island. Arnie seemed completely oblivious to her presence the entire time. If you had to add another person into the equation, Arnie wasn't half bad, really. She heard the men coming back, so she headed upstairs. They'd all been forced into close quarters on the ride here, but now that there were rooms to retire to, it was possible to give one another some space. She knew Daniel and his brother had a lot to sort through, and there was no reason she needed to hear any of it. There wasn't a ton to do in her storage room. She refilled her little acid syringes, though she couldn't think of a scenario where she would need them here. She could have worked on harvesting the kernels out of her peach pits, but she'd left them in the barn. It wasn't worth taking the chance to try to connect to the internet, just in case she was going to be here for a while, and she didn't have any reading material. There was one project she'd been thinking about, but part of her violently rejected the idea of writing any of it down. Though national security hadn't exactly been her friend for a while, she still wasn't going to put the public in danger. Writing her memoirs was not an option. But she needed to think it all through in an organized way. Maybe if she just wrote some key words to help her remember? She was sure of one thing. Something she'd overheard in the 6 years she'd worked with Dr. Barnaby had been the reason for the lab attack and for every assassination attempt that had followed. If she could pinpoint the information involved, she would have a much better idea of who was behind the murder agenda. The problem was that she'd heard a lot of things, and all of it was insanely sensitive. She started to make a list. She created a code designating the biggest issues, the nuclear ones, as A1 through A4. Four big bombs that had been controlled during her tenure. Those were the most serious projects she'd worked on. It would have to have been something of the gravest nature to merit destroying her section. She hoped. If it was some petty whim by a cheating admiral who thought he might have been mentioned in an investigation, she had no chance of ever figuring it out. T1 through T49 were all the non-nuclear terrorist actions she could remember. There were minor plans, ones that hadn't come to much, that were slipping through her memory, she knew. The major plans, T1 through T17, ranged from biological attacks to economic destabilization to importing suicide bombers. She was trying to come up with a system to help her keep all of the different actions separate. The first letter of the city of origin plus the first letter of the target city? Would that differentiate the events enough? Would she forget the meaning of her notations? But listing the full place names was too much information to commit to writing. When she heard Kevin calling for her.
Hey, Oleander! Where are you hiding?
She snapped her computer shut and walked to the top of the stairs. Did you need something? He came around the corner and looked up at her. Both of them held their position, keeping the length of the stairs between them.
Just a heads up. I'm taking off. I left a phone with Daniel. I'll call when I'm ready for you to send the email.
Prepaid disposable?
This ain't my first rodeo, sister.
Well, good luck, I guess.
Don't turn my house into some death lab while I'm gone. Too late. She suppressed a grin. I'll try to rein myself in. This is probably it. I'd say it was a pleasure.
She smiled. But we've always been so honest with each other. Why start lying now?
He smiled in return, then was suddenly serious. You'll keep an eye on him?
She was slightly taken aback by the request, that Kevin would entrust his brother to her this way, and even more shocked by her own response. Of course, she promised immediately. It was disturbing to realize how sincere her answer was, and how involuntary. Of course she would keep Daniel safe to the best of her ability. It wasn't even a question. She remembered again the strange feeling that had first surfaced in the dark of her torture tent, her premonition that the stakes had doubled from one life to two. Part of her wondered when she would be free from this feeling of responsibility. Maybe this was always how someone felt after interrogating an innocent person. Or maybe it only happened when that person was as, what was the right word? Honest? Virtuous? Wholesome? Someone as good as Daniel. He grunted, then turned his back and headed toward the main room of the house. She couldn't see him anymore, but she could still hear him.
Danny, come here. We got one more thing we need to do.
Curious and procrastinating, the catalog of nightmares past was beginning to give her a headache. She walked quietly down the stairs to see what was happening. She knew Kevin well enough to be sure he wasn't calling Daniel over for a heartfelt goodbye, complete with hugs and snuggles. The front room was empty. Arnie had cleared out, but she could hear voices through the screen door. She went out to the porch where Lola was waiting for her. She absently scratched the dog's head while she took in the scene, lit by the porch lamps and the headlights of the sedan. Einstein, Kahn, and the Rottweiler were all lined up at attention in front of Kevin. He looked to be addressing them while Daniel watched. Kevin started with his star pupil.
Come, Einstein.
The dog stepped forward. Kevin turned his body to point at Daniel.
That's your honey, Einstein. Honey.
Einstein ran to Daniel, tail wagging, and commenced sniffing up and down his legs. From Daniel's expression, he was just as confused as Alex was.
Okay,
Kevin said to the other dogs.
Kahn, Gunther, watch.
He turned back to Einstein and Daniel, dropping into a wrestler's crouch and approaching slowly.
I'm gonna get your honey,
he taunted the dog in a growly voice. Einstein wheeled around and put himself between Daniel and Kevin's advance. The hackles rose at least 6 inches off the top of his shoulders, and a menacing snarl slid from between his suddenly exposed fangs. The demon dog she'd first met was back. Kevin feinted to the right, and Einstein blocked him. He dove left toward Daniel, and the dog launched himself at his master, taking him down with a solid-sounding thud. In the same second, Einstein had his jaws wrapped around Kevin's neck. It would have been a frightening picture if it weren't for the smile on Kevin's face.
Good boy! Smart boy!
Kill. Kill, Alex whispered under her breath. Einstein released and jumped back, tail wagging again. He pranced a few steps back and forward, ready to play another game.
Okay, Kahn. Your turn.
Once again, Kevin identified Daniel as the Great Dane's honey, and then made as if to attack. Einstein stayed with Kahn, supervising, Alex imagined. The big dog simply shoved one massive paw against Kevin's chest as he attacked and toppled him backward. Kahn used the same paw to pin him to the ground, while Einstein moved in for the jugular. Kill, she said again, louder. Kevin heard this time, and shot her a look that clearly said,
If I weren't in the middle of teaching these dogs something very important, I would have them tear you to shreds.
Kahn set out the next round, while Einstein supervised again. The barrel-chested Rottweiler took Kevin down even harder than Einstein had. She heard the breath crush out of his chest. That had to hurt. She smiled.
Do you mind if I ask what all that was about?
Daniel asked, as Kevin heaved himself to his feet and started brushing the dirt off his dark jeans and black t-shirt.
It's a command behavior I created for personal protection dogs. These 3 dogs will guard you with their lives from here on out. They'll also probably be under your feet a lot.
Why, honey?
It's just a word. but to be honest, I was mostly picturing it being used for women and children.
Thanks, Daniel retorted.
Oh, relax. You know I don't mean it that way. Think of a better command and we'll use it with the next generation.
There was an awkward pause. Kevin looked at the car, then back to his brother.
Look, you're safe here, but stay close to the dogs anyway, and the poison lady. She's tough. Just don't eat anything she tries to feed you.
I'm sure we'll be fine.
If anything happens, give Einstein this command.
He held out a little piece of paper about the size of a business card. Daniel took it and stuck it in his pocket without looking at it. Alex thought it was odd that Kevin wouldn't say it out loud. Or maybe he just wrote it down because he didn't trust Daniel's memory. Kevin looked now as if a hug was actually on his mind, despite what she'd imagined before, but then Daniel's posture stiffened slightly, and Kevin turned away. He kept talking as he walked to the sedan.
We'll talk more when I get back. Keep the phone on you. I'll call when things are set.
Be careful.
Wilco.
Kevin got in the car and revved the engine. He put his right hand on the back of the passenger headrest and watched out the rear window as he maneuvered the car to face the road. He didn't look at his brother again. Then the red tail lights were fading into the distance. A weight seemed to lift off Alex's chest with his leaving. Daniel watched the car for a minute, the loyal three all sitting close to his feet. Then he turned and walked thoughtfully up the porch steps. The dogs moved with him. Kevin hadn't been kidding about them staying underfoot. Daniel was lucky Khan kept to the rear, or he wouldn't have been able to see where he was going. He stopped next to Alex and turned to face the same way she did, both of them staring out into the featureless black night. The dogs arranged themselves around their feet. Lola got muscled out by the Rottweiler and whined once in protest. Daniel gripped the porch railing in both hands, holding tight like he was expecting a shift in gravity.
Is it bad that I'm relieved he's gone? Daniel asked. He's just a lot, you know? I can't process everything with him always talking.
His right hand relaxed its hold, then moved to rest on the small of her back, in an almost automatic manner, like he hadn't consciously decided to place it there. The way he was always touching her reminded Alex of the experiments she and Barnaby had done years back with sensory deprivation tanks. It was an effective means of getting someone to talk without leaving any marks, but on the whole, it took too much time to be the best option. Anyone who went into the tank, though, no matter his level of resistance, had the same reaction when he was let out. He craved physical contact, like a drug fix. She thought of one memorable experience with an army corporal, a volunteer they worked with in the initial testing phase, and the very long and somewhat inappropriate hug she'd received upon his exit. They'd had to have security peel him off her. Daniel must feel a lot like that soldier. For days, he'd been completely out of touch with anything he considered to be normal life. He would need the reassurance that another warm, breathing human being was there next to him. Of course, this diagnosis also applied to herself. She'd been out of touch with normal life for much longer than Daniel had. While that meant she was used to the lack, it also meant that she'd been starved of human contact for a very long time. Maybe this was why she felt so improbably comforted whenever he touched her.
"I don't think it's a bad thing," she answered him. "It's natural that you'd need space to deal with all of this."
He laughed once, a darker sound than his earlier fit.
"Except that I don't need space from anyone but him," he sighed. "Kev has always been like that, even when we were kids. Has to be in charge, has to have the spotlight."
"Funny traits for a spy."
"I guess he's figured out a way to suppress those instincts when he's working, and then it all comes surging out when he's not."
"I wouldn't know anything about it. Only child."
"Lucky, lucky you," he sighed again.
"He's probably not so bad."
Why was she defending Kevin? She wondered.
Just trying to cheer Daniel up, maybe.
If you weren't stuck in this very extreme situation, he'd be easier to deal with.
"That's fair. I should try to be fair. I guess I'm just angry. So angry. I know he didn't mean to do it, but his life choices have suddenly destroyed all of mine. That's so... Kevin."
"It takes a while to accept what has happened to you.
Alex said slowly. You'll probably stay angry, but it gets easier. Most of the time, I forget how angry I am. It's different for me, though. It was people I didn't know very well who did this to me. It wasn't my family.
But your enemies actually tried to kill you. That's worse. Don't even try to compare what happened to you to what's happening to me. Kevin never meant to hurt me. It's just hard, you know? I feel like I've died, but I have to keep on living anyway. I don't know how.
She patted his left hand on the rail, remembering how that had made her feel better in the car. The skin over his knuckles was stretched tight. You'll learn, like I did. It turns into a routine. The life you had before gets dimmer, and you get philosophical. I mean, disasters happen to people all the time. What's the difference between this and having your nation overrun by guerrilla warfare, right? Or your town destroyed by a tsunami? Everything changes, and nothing is as safe as it was. Only that safety was always just an illusion, anyway. Sorry, that might just be the world's crappiest pep talk. He laughed. Not the very crappiest. I do feel infinitesimally better. Well, then I guess my job here is done. How did you get started with all this? The question rolled out lightly, as if it were a simple thing. She hesitated. What do you mean?
Why did you choose this profession? Before they tried to kill you, I mean. Were you in the military? Did you volunteer?
Again, the questions were spoken lightly, like he was inquiring how she had become a financial planner or an interior decorator. The very lack of emotion was its own tell. He kept his face forward, staring out into the darkness. She didn't evade this time. She would want to know this too, if fate had saddled her with one of her peers as a companion. It was something she'd asked Barnaby in the early days of their association. His answer wasn't much different from hers.
I never actually chose it, she explained slowly. And no, I wasn't military.
I was in medical school when they approached me. I'd first been interested in pathology, but then I shifted focus. I was deep into a particular vein of research. You could call it a kind of chemical mind control, I guess. There weren't many people doing precisely what I was doing, and there were a lot of roadblocks in my way. Funding, tools, test subjects. Well, most of it came down to funding. The professors I was working under didn't even fully understand my research, so I didn't have a lot of help. These mysterious government officials showed up and offered me an opportunity. They picked up the tab for my massive student loans. I got to finish my schooling while focusing my research toward my new handler's goals. When I graduated, I went to work in their lab, where every technology I could dream of was at my disposal, and money was never an object. It was obvious what they had me creating. They didn't lie to me. I was aware of the work I was contributing to, but it sounded noble, the way they described it. I was helping my country. He waited, still staring ahead. I didn't think I would be the one who would actually use my creations on the subject. I thought I would just be supplying the tools they needed. She shook her head back and forth slowly. It didn't work like that, though. The antibodies I'd created were too specialized. The doctor who administered them had to understand how they worked. So that left exactly one person. The hand on the small of her back didn't move. It was too still, frozen in place. The only person ever inside the interrogation room with me, beside the subject, was Barnaby. At first, he handled the questioning. He frightened me in the beginning, but he turned out to be such a gentle person. We were mostly in the lab, creating and developing. Actual interrogations made up only about 5% of my job. She took a deep breath. But often, when there was a crisis at hand, they needed to be running multiple interrogations simultaneously. Speed was always critical. I had to be able to work alone. I didn't want to do it, but I understood why it needed to be that way. It wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. The hard part was realizing how good I was at it. That scared me. It's never really stopped scaring me. Barnaby was the only one she'd confessed this to. He told her not to worry. She was just one of those people who were good at anything they tried. An overachiever. Alex cleared the sudden lump out of her throat. But I got results. I saved a lot of lives. And I never killed anyone. Not while I was working for the government. Now she stared out into the darkness, too. She didn't want to see his reaction. I've always wondered if that was enough to make me less than a monster. She was fairly certain, though, that the answer was no. It was just a low, lingering sound in the back of his throat. She kept staring at the dark nothing in front of her. She'd never tried to explain this choice, the line of dominoes that had made her what she was, to another human being. She didn't think she'd done a very good job. And then he quietly chuckled. Now she turned to stare up at him in disbelief. His lips were puckered in an unwilling half-smile.
I was braced for something really disturbing, but that all sounded a lot more reasonable than I expected.
Her brows pulled together. He found her story reasonable? His stomach growled. He laughed again, and the tension of the moment seemed to vanish with the sound.
Did Kevin not feed you? She asked. This is a help-yourself kind of place, I guess. I could use some food, he agreed.
She led him to the freezer, trying to hide her surprise that he seemed to be treating her no differently than before. It had felt dangerous, speaking all that out loud. But then, she supposed he already knew the worst of it, having learned it in the cruelest way possible. Her explanation was really nothing after that. Hungry, Daniel might have been, but he wasn't too thrilled by the available supplies. He unenthusiastically chose a pizza, as she had, grumbling about Kevin's deficiencies in the kitchen, which seemed to be long-standing from what she heard. The conversation rolled easily, like she was just an ordinary person to him.
I don't know where he gets all that manic energy, Daniel said, eating nothing but this.
Arnie can't be much of a cook either. Where'd he go, anyway?
He hit the sack before Kev left. Early riser, I infer. I think his room is back that way.
Daniel gestured in the opposite direction from the stairs. Does he seem a little strange to you?
What, with the mute thing? I figure that's just the glue in his relationship with Kevin. You have to be able to stomach listening to someone else talk non-stop if you're going to be friends with Kev. No room for your own words.
She snorted.
There was ice cream under the pizza. You want some?
He asked. She did. So the search began for silverware and bowls. Daniel did locate an ice cream scooper and soup spoons, but they had to put the ice cream into coffee mugs. As she watched him ladle the ice cream out of the carton, something occurred to her. Are you left-handed?
Yes.
Oh, I thought Kevin was right-handed. But if you're identical twins, doesn't that mean...
Usually,
Daniel said, passing her the first mug. The ice cream was plain vanilla, not her first choice, but she was happy to have any kind of sugar right now.
We're a special case, actually. We're called mirror image twins. About 20% of identical twins, the ones where the egg splits late, they think, develop as opposites. So our faces aren't exactly the same unless you look at one as a reflection. Doesn't mean much for Kevin, especially.
He savored his first bite of ice cream, then smiled.
I, on the other hand, will run into a problem if I ever need an organ transplant. All of my insides are reversed, so it's very complicated to replace certain things unless they find an organ from another reverse twin who also just happens to be a genetic match. In other words, I better hope I never need a new liver.
He took another bite. It would make a lot more sense to me if it was Kevin who had everything backward. They laughed together, but it was much gentler than it had been earlier in the day. Apparently, they'd gotten the hysteria out of their systems. What does the paper say? The one with the command for the dog? Daniel pulled the card from his jeans pocket, glanced at it, and then handed it to her. It read, in all caps, Escape Protocol. Do you think something bad happens if we say it out loud? She wondered.
I suppose it's possible. I'll believe anything after seeing his secret lair.
Kevin really needs to hire someone to come up with better names for his commands. He's not very good at that part.
I guess that could be my job now, Daniel sighed. I do like dogs. It might be fun.
It's still kind of teaching,
right? If Kev lets me do any, Daniel scowled. I wonder if he sees me just mucking out stalls. I wouldn't put it past him.
And then he sighed.
At least the students all appear to be pretty bright. Do you think I could teach them to play volleyball?
Well, actually, yeah. They don't seem to have many limitations.
I guess it won't be so bad, right?
Right, she said confidently, and then mentally called herself a liar.
Chapter 14. When Alex woke up, the first issue was the soreness. Unconsciousness had given her a break from the pain, and that period of relief, though welcome, made the awakening to reality worse. The room was pitch black. She assumed there was a window somewhere behind the boxes, but it must be covered with a blackout shade. Kevin wouldn't want too many lighted windows at night. Better to keep the house looking only partially inhabited. As far as any locals knew, Arnie was the sole occupant. She rolled out of the cot, groaning when her left shoulder and hip hit the wooden edge, and then felt her way to the light switch. She'd cleared a wide path from the cot to the door, so that she wouldn't add to her injuries fumbling around in the dark. Once the light was on, she disarmed the leads and then removed her gas mask. Given that there were people here that she didn't want to kill, she'd used a pressurized canister of knockout gas. The hall was empty, the bathroom door open. There was one damp towel hanging on the rack, so Daniel must already be awake. That was no surprise. She'd been up pretty late with her memory list, despairing, even as she continued typing, at the probability of recalling in a week's time what any of her cryptic notes stood for. As she worked through it, she noted plenty of secrets worth killing over, but none specific to her or Barnaby. There would have been other victims if any of those particular secrets were the root problem. From what she'd been able to track in the news, her death and Barnaby's had not been followed by any other names she recognized. Nothing public, anyway. While she shampooed her hair, she thought about how she could narrow down the time frame. She usually did her best creative thinking in the shower. Barnaby had always been paranoid, but he hadn't started acting on that paranoia until 2 years before his death. She remembered that initial conversation, the first time she'd realized she was in actual danger. It had been late fall, around Thanksgiving. If that was not a random change, if there had been some sort of catalyst, maybe Barnaby had been reacting to the case that was the issue. She couldn't be sure of the timing, but she was fairly positive about the interrogations that had taken place after that change. In her memory, they were all riddled through with the new stress and distraction. So those could be ruled out. And she knew all the cases from her first year easily, when everything had been horrifically new and awkward. Those could be set aside as well. It still left her 3 years of work to sort through, and two of the nuclear scares. But she was happy to have even the slightest measure of containment. She appreciated the fluffy towels the bathroom was stocked with. Kevin apparently enjoyed his creature comforts. Or maybe it was Arnie who liked things plush. Whoever it was had also stocked the bathroom with all the toiletries a hotel would provide, only in full-size bottles. There had been shampoo and conditioner in the shower. Toothpaste, lotion, and mouthwash were all set out on the counter. Nice touch. She took a swipe at the mirror with the towel and quickly confirmed that she was still unfit to be seen. The black eyes were mostly a sickly green color now, with some of the darker purple in the inside corners. Her lip was starting to deflate, but that only made the superglue more obvious. The bruises on her cheeks were just barely beginning to yellow around the edges. She sighed. It would be at least a week before her face could go out in public, even in makeup. After dressing in her least dirty clothes, Alex gathered the rest, balled them up inside a t-shirt as an improvised laundry bag, and set off in search of the facilities. It was empty and quiet downstairs. She could hear barking in the distance. Daniel and Arnie must be out dealing with the animals. She found the spacious laundry room tucked away behind the kitchen. She noted the back door, always good to be familiar with the exits, and the large plastic attachment to the bottom half of it. It took her a minute to realize it was a doggy door, a huge doggy door, big enough to let Khan in. She hadn't seen any dogs in the house so far, but it must not always be off limits. She started her load, then went to find breakfast. The cupboards weren't much more helpful than the refrigerator had been. Half were full of cans of dog food, and the other half mostly empty. There was some coffee left in the pot on the counter, thank goodness. She also found a stash of Pop-Tarts, which she pilfered. Apparently, Kevin and Arnie cared less about food than they did about towels. She found a mug from a Boy Scout camp circa 1983, chipped and faded. The time frame didn't fit either of the men who lived here. Must be a second-hand acquisition. It worked just fine, regardless. When she was done, she loaded the mug in the stainless steel dishwasher and then went to see what was on the day's agenda. Lola and Con were on the front porch, along with a Rottweiler whose name she couldn't remember. They all got up like they'd been waiting for her and followed as she headed out to the barn. She patted Lola a few times as they walked. It seemed like the polite thing to do. North of the modern outbuilding was a big run full of animals, Arnie in the center of them all, calling out commands to the frolicking dogs. It didn't look like many of them were listening to him, but a few played teacher's pet. She couldn't see Daniel anywhere. She wandered into the outbuilding, went down the length of it to where the supply room was. Kevin and Arnie stocked the place much better for the dogs than for themselves. Daniel wasn't there either. She meandered out to the edge of the practice yard, not sure what else to do. It was odd. She was used to being alone all the time. But now Daniel wasn't around to check on, and suddenly she was at loose ends. Arnie, of course, paid zero attention to her as she came up to the fence and hooked her fingers through the links. She watched him work with a young German shepherd, still all oversized paws and floppy ears, long past the point when her own patience would have run out. Lola's two pups came over to press their bodies against the fence and beg for licks from their mother. She obliged a few times, then yelped at them, a funny sound that made Alex think of her own mother, reminding her to study after dinner. Sure enough, the two half-grown puppies ambled back toward the man with the treats. Maybe Daniel had returned to the practice range. Kevin had said there was a truck around here, but she'd seen no sign of it. She wished Daniel had waited for her. She wanted to play with the SIG some more, and honestly, she could use some exercise with her PPK, too. Her life had never depended on her aim in the past, but it very well might in the future. She didn't want to waste the unexpected opportunity to improve her skills. She watched Arnie with the young dogs for another half hour. Finally, she interrupted, more out of boredom than any driving need to know. "Hey," she called over the dog sounds. Arnie?" He looked up, his face betraying no interest. "Did Daniel take the truck over to the range? What time did he leave?" He nodded, then shrugged. She tried to guess at a translation, but quickly gave up. She would have to keep the question simpler. "He took the truck?" she verified. Arnie was focused on the dogs again, but she did get an answer.
"Guess so. Wasn't there the last time I went to the barn."
"How far is it to the range?" she asked. It had seemed too long a distance to walk, but she might as well ask.
"About 5 miles, as the crow flies."
Not as far as she'd thought. Daniel was a runner. Couldn't he have left the truck? Well, she could use a run herself, but he'd probably be on his way back before she could get there. "And you don't know what time he left?"
"Didn't see him. It was before 9, though."
It had been more than an hour. Doubtless he'd return soon. She'd wait her turn. It was good that Daniel was taking an interest in the practice. Maybe some of what she and Kevin had been trying to tell him had sunk in a little. She didn't actually want him to have to live in fear, but it was the best option. Fear would keep him alive. She waved her thanks to Arnie, then headed back to the house to finish the laundry, furry entourage in tow. An hour later, she was in clean clothes for the first time in several days, and it felt fantastic. She put the outfit she'd been wearing in the washing machine, happy at the thought of having her whole wardrobe smelling nice again. She put in another 30 minutes on her memory project. At least she remembered her notations 12 hours later. She was trying to do things chronologically as best she could, though her numbering system was based on severity. It might have made things more confusing than they should be, but she didn't want to reorganize it all now. This morning she worked terrorist events number 15 and 3, an attempted subway bombing and a stolen biological weapon, trying to think of any names that had come up in context. The terrorist and Russian profiteers on number 15 had been dealt with, so it was probably nothing to do with them. She noted it down anyway. NY was too obvious an abbreviation, so she used MB for Manhattan Bronx. The one train had been the target. TT for the faction behind it. KV for Kalashnikov Alleys. VR for the Russian who sold them the materials. A few outsiders who had aided and abetted. RP, FD, BB. Number 3 had a few loose ends, as she remembered, but those had been turned over to the CIA. She looked at her letters. J, IP for Jammu, India, on the border of Pakistan. TP, the Tacoma Plague, they'd called it. It had been developed by a known terrorist cell from the notes of an American scientist, lifted from a lab near Seattle. The splinter cell, FA, was involved in events T-10 and T-13 as well. The department had still been helping the CIA procure information about the remnants of the cell back when she'd been fired. She wondered if the CIA had ever shut it down completely. Kevin had been busy enough in Mexico that he probably couldn't give her the answer. She noted down initials for a few connected names. DH was the American scientist the formula was stolen from, and OM was a member of the terrorist cell whom she'd interrogated. She thought there was another American involved somehow, not a participant in the event. Or had that name been related to number 4? She only remembered the name was short, clipped-sounding. Did it start with a P? She'd never been allowed to keep any notes, of course, so there was nothing to refer back to. It was frustrating. Enough so that she gave up and decided to look for lunch. The Pop-Tart hadn't exactly been filling. As she walked into the great room, she could hear the low rumble of an engine pulling up outside, then the grinding sound of heavy tires on the gravel. Finally. Habit had her checking out the door to make sure it was Daniel. Just as she peeked out, the engine noise cut off. A dusty white older model Toyota truck with an equally aged and dusty camper shell was parked where they'd left the sedan last night, and Daniel was getting out of the driver's seat. Einstein jumped out the car door after him. Even as she was admiring the vehicle's ordinary exterior, perfect for blending in, a slow creeping sensation started to inch up her back, raising bumps on her skin as it moved. She froze, wide eyes darting around like a startled rabbit trying to suss out the direction danger was coming from. What had her subconscious noticed that she had not? She zeroed in on the paper bag cradled in Daniel's left arm. As she watched, he pulled the front seat forward and grabbed another bag. Einstein danced happily around his legs. Kahn and the Rottweiler ran down the porch steps to join in. She felt the blood drain out of her face, leaving a dizzy sensation behind. And then the second of shock passed, and she was in motion. She charged after the dogs, feeling the blood pulse back into her bruised cheeks. "Hey, Alex," Daniel called cheerfully. "There are a few more bags in the back if you're feeling..." He stopped abruptly when he processed her expression. "What's happened? Kevin, where did you go?" She spit the words through her teeth. He blinked once. "I just ran out to that town we passed on our way in, Childress." Her hands balled into fists. "I took the dog," he offered. "Nothing happened." She pressed one fist to her mouth, winced, and tried to calm herself. It wasn't his fault. He just didn't understand. She and Kevin should have advised him better. It was her own misstep for assuming some of that guidance had happened while she'd been asleep in the car. But if Kevin hadn't been prepping Daniel for his new life, then what had they been talking about for all those hours? "Did anyone see..." "Of course they did. You bought things. How many people saw you?" He blinked again. "Did I do something wrong?"
"You went into town?"
A deep voice rumbled behind her. Daniel shifted his gaze to a point over her head.
"Yeah, I mean, you guys were pretty short on groceries. I just wanted to get some non-frozen stuff, you know? You seem busy."
She turned to look at Arnie. His face was impassive, but she knew it well enough now to see little breaks in the facade,
stress marks around his eyes, one slightly more prominent vein in his forehead. "Do you have a way to contact Kevin?" she asked him.
"You mean Joe?"
"Probably. Daniel's brother?"
"Nope."
"What did I do?" Daniel asked pleadingly. She sighed as she turned back to him. "Do you remember when Kevin said that no one around here had ever seen his face? Well, now they have." Daniel's color started to ebb as he processed that.
"But I used a fake name. I said I was just passing through."
"How many people did you talk to?"
"Just the cashier at the grocery store, and the one at the..."
"How many places did you go into?"
"3.
She and Arnie exchanged a glance, horrified on her part, more inscrutable on his.
"Kevin left me money for things I might need. I assumed he meant stuff like eggs and milk," Daniel offered.
"He meant fake IDs," Alex snapped. The rest of Daniel's color vanished, and his mouth fell open. They stared at him for a long moment. Daniel took a deep breath, visibly centering himself.
"Okay," he said. "I screwed up. Can we take the groceries in before you tell me how bad? It only adds waste to my mistake if the perishables spoil in the truck."
Lips pressed into a tight line, ignoring the irritating glob of superglue, Alex nodded once and went around to the back of the truck to help unload. She saw all the bags inside the camper and felt the blood behind her bruises again. Of course, on top of going into the closest town, he would have bought enough food to feed an army. And if there was any other thing that would make him more memorable, he'd probably done that too. In ominous silence, Alex and Arnie brought all the bags in and put them on the counter. Daniel worked back and forth between the cupboards and the fridge, sorting each item into the right spot. Alex might have thought that he wasn't taking this seriously enough, except for the fact that his color kept changing, though his expression was steady. His cheeks and neck would suddenly flush, and then he'd go white again. The cooling-off period was probably a good idea. It gave Alex a chance to think everything through and be realistic about the danger posed. She'd been about ready to steal Arnie's truck and disappear, but she knew that would be overreacting. Sometimes overreaction saved your life. Sometimes they just put you in more danger. She had to remember her face. Running now would only cause her more problems. Daniel placed the last item, some kind of leafy green vegetable, in the fridge and shut the door. He didn't turn, just stood there with his head slightly bowed toward the stainless steel.
"How bad?"
he asked quietly. She looked at Arnie. He didn't seem inclined to speak. "Tell me you paid cash," she began.
"Yes."
"Well, that's something at least."
"But not everything,"
Daniel guessed. "No. Childress is a very small town."
"Just over 6,000 people,"
Arnie rumbled. It was worse than she'd thought. She knew of high schools with bigger student bodies. "So, a stranger in town is memorable," she said. "You would have been noticed." Daniel turned to her. His face was composed, but his eyes were troubled.
"Yes, I can see that,"
he agreed. "You were in Arnie's truck, with Arnie's dog," Alex said. "Someone could connect you back to Arnie."
"Einstein stayed in the truck," Daniel said quietly. "I don't think anyone was watching me get in or out."
"There are 100 similar trucks in town. 5 that are the exact same color, year, and model. 2 of those have campers,"
Arnie said, not to Daniel, but to Alex.
"Half the people there would have a dog with them."
"That's helpful," she told Arnie. "You guys did good here."
"How much does this affect you?" Daniel asked him.
Arnie shrugged.
"No way to know. People forget stuff pretty quick when they've got no real reason to remember. We lie low. It'll probably come to nothing."
"Anyway, what's done is done," Alex mused. "We'll just have to be extra careful."
"Kevin's going to be furious," Daniel sighed.
"When isn't he furious?" Alex asked, and Arnie actually laughed out one brief chuckle. "Anyway, it's his own fault for not explaining anything to you. A mistake I'm not going to repeat." She gestured toward the couch. Arnie nodded to himself, then clumped out the front door, back to his work. Kevin had picked a good partner. She found herself wishing that Arnie were Daniel's brother rather than Kevin.
Arnie was so much easier to deal with.
How about I make lunch while you lecture?
Daniel offered.
I'm suffering extreme hunger pangs. I don't know what Arnie survives on around here.
Sure, she said. She grabbed a bar stool and planted herself.
I did honestly think that I was helping,
Daniel murmured as he went back to the fridge. I know, Daniel, I know. And I'm hungry, too, she conceded.
I'll ask first next time, he promised.
She sighed. That's a start. Though she didn't want to admit it, the large sandwich Daniel made for her did a lot to mellow her perspective on the incident. She gave him the basics while they ate. There'd be time for more detail when they had a specific task ahead of them, and he listened attentively.
I don't know how to see the world that way, he confessed. It all seems so paranoid.
Yes, paranoia is exactly what we're shooting for. Paranoia is good.
That's a little contradictory to how they teach it in the real world, but I'll work on flipping my perspective. I know I can do this much. I will check with you on everything from now on, before I breathe.
You'll start to get it. It becomes habit after a while, but don't think of what you used to know as the real world. The things that happen in this world are a whole lot more real, and a whole lot more permanent. It's primitive, survival instincts. I know you have them. You were born with them. You just have to tap into that part of yourself.
I have to think like the hunted.
He tried to keep his face positive, but she could see how much the idea devastated him. Yes, you are the hunted, and so am I, and so is your brother, and hell, so is Arnie, apparently. It's a very popular state of being around here.
But you, he said slowly, and my brother, and probably even Arnie, are still predators. I'm just prey.
She shook her head. I started out as prey. I learned. You've got advantages I never had. You share an exact genetic code with your brother, the apex predator. I saw you down at the range. Once those instincts kick in, you'll be plenty able to take care of yourself.
You're just saying that to make me feel better.
I'm saying that because I'm jealous. If I could be tall and strong and a natural shot, it would change this game I'm playing.
If I could be smart and paranoid, I wouldn't have put us at risk.
She smiled. There's no comparison. You have the ability to learn. I'll never be able to grow any taller. He grinned back.
But you're so much stealthier the way you are.
Ugh, she groaned. Let's go do something productive and shoot up some hay bales.
Okay, but I have to be back by...
He glanced at the clock on the range.
6 o'clock at the latest.
Alex was confused. Is your favorite TV show on or something?
No, I owe you dinner, and it's not like I can take you out on the town.
He smiled apologetically.
That's one of the reasons. Beyond starvation, I went shopping. I asked you to dinner. You don't remember?
Oh, I remember. I just think we're probably quits on anything you might have offered before I kidnapped you.
I won't feel right if I don't make good. Anyway, someone has to cook, and I'm not half bad at it. I already know that Kevin and Arnie are useless in that department.
Alex sighed. I'm probably just as bad.
So it's settled. Now let's go improve our aim.
Daniel picked things up so quickly, it was no wonder Kevin had been recruited. While they practiced, Daniel told Alex about Kevin's prowess at sports and his particular gift for shooting. Apparently, the boys and their father had taken part in many competitions, and Kevin had almost always come away with the first-place trophy.
I made the mistake of beating him once, when we were 9. Not worth it. From then on, I went along to keep Dad happy, but I didn't really compete. I found my own interests, things that Kevin didn't want to bother with, like books, community involvement, distance running, culinary classes, girl stuff, as he frequently informed me.
Alex loaded a new magazine. They were really burning through Kevin's ammo, but she didn't much care. He could afford new ammo. She'd done a thorough search of the barn today and found a few of his cash hoards. It looked like some of the drug money had come home with him. As a general rule, she avoided stealing unless she'd run out of other options. But she was very tempted now to grab as much as she could carry. After all,
It was partially Kevin's fault she was so much poorer than she had been last month. I wonder what would have happened to me if I'd had a sibling who was better at chemistry and biology in high school, she asked. Would I have given it up? Become an accountant? She took a shot, then smiled. Right in the heart.
Maybe you're more competitive than I am. Maybe you would have fought it out for the crown.
He leaned casually into his shooting position and fired a round at a bale 100 yards farther away than hers. She fired again. Maybe I would be happier as an accountant. Daniel sighed.
You're probably right. I was pretty happy as a teacher. Not a glamorous career, but the mundane can be quite satisfying. In fact, being ordinary in general is highly underrated.
I wouldn't know, but it sounds nice.
You were never ordinary. It wasn't a question.
No, she agreed. Not really. Unfortunate, as it turned out. Always too smart for her own good, though it had taken her a while to see things that way. She shot her target in the head twice in quick succession. Daniel straightened up and leaned the long rifle against his shoulder. Einstein got to his feet and stretched out his back.
Well, I had my few areas where I transcended the mundane, he said,
and Alex could tell from his tone that he was purposely lightening the mood.
And lucky you, he continued. Tonight, you get to see me work in my favorite field.
Alex set the SIG down and stretched, much like the dog had. Her muscles got stiff more quickly with her injuries. She wasn't moving the way she usually did. She was favoring the damaged parts of her body. She needed to force herself to use her limbs equally.
Sounds exciting, and I'm hungry, so I really hope the field you're talking about is the kitchen. It is indeed. Shall we?
He made a sweeping gesture with his free hand toward the truck.
As soon as we clean up our toys.
Daniel did seem very at home, humming as he diced things and sprinkled spices on things and put other things into saucepans. Of course, she couldn't help but notice that a lot of the tools appeared to be brand new and hadn't been in the cupboards when she'd dug through them earlier. She would hold off on the lecture about how people who were just passing through town rarely bought things for their kitchens. It was starting to smell kind of amazing, and she didn't want to jinx anything. She sat sideways on the sofa, her legs curled up under her, watching the news, and Daniel at the same time. Nothing interesting on TV, just a lot of local stuff and a little bit about the primaries, which were still about 9 months away. The whole election process was irritating to Alex. She would probably have to stop watching the news altogether when the real campaigning started. As someone who knew better than most the kind of darkness that went on behind the scenes and how little any of the important decisions had to do with the figurehead spokesperson the people elected, it was hard for her to care much about left or right. Arnie had eaten another frozen dinner and retired around 7:30, as seemed to be his habit. Alex had tried to convince him that a home-cooked meal was worth waiting for, but he hadn't even bothered responding to her coaxing. She was surprised that Daniel didn't give it a try, but maybe he was concentrating too hard on the food to notice. She offered to help once or twice, only to be told in no uncertain terms that all she was allowed to do was eat. Daniel grumbled to himself as he set up the unmatched plates, random silverware, and coffee mugs. She would have to remind him that he wasn't to go off on another shopping spree for monogram china. He moved all the food to the table, and she got up eagerly, famished, and driven half-wild by the various fragrances wafting through the room. He held a chair out for her, which reminded her of things she'd seen in old movies. Was this what normal people did? She wasn't sure, but she didn't think so. At least, not in the places she went out to eat. With a flourish, he pulled out a lighter and lit a blue and pink polka-dot candle shaped like the number one that he'd stuck into a bread roll.
This was the closest I could find to a taper, he explained as he saw her expression. And this was the best I could do for wine, he continued, gesturing to the bottle that sat open beside her coffee mug.
The words on the label were all unfamiliar to her.
It's the choicest vintage the United Supermarket carries.
He made as if to pour, and she automatically covered the top of her mug with her hand. I don't drink. He hesitated, then poured a small amount for himself.
I got some apple juice this morning. Or I could get you some water.
Juice would be great. He got up and headed for the fridge.
Can I ask? AA or a religious preference?
Safety. I haven't touched anything that might cloud my perception in 4 years. He returned and poured her a mugful of juice before sitting opposite her. His face was carefully nonchalant.
Didn't you start running just 3 years ago?
Yes, but once it really sunk in that someone might try to kill me at any moment, it was hard to think about much else. I couldn't afford to be distracted. I could miss something. I did miss something, I guess.
If I'd really been on my toes, Barnaby might still be alive.
We shouldn't have waited.
You don't feel safe here?
She looked up at him, surprised by the question. The answer was so obvious.
No. Because I was stupid this morning?
She shook her head. No, not at all. I never feel safe anywhere. She heard how blasé the word sounded, the way the words, of course, seemed to be embedded in her answer, and watched his face fall a little in response.
Hey, but I probably have PTSD. It doesn't have to be like that. I'm sure another person could handle things better.
He raised one eyebrow.
Yes, Kevin seems completely normal.
They laughed again. She hadn't laughed this much in the past 3 years put together. He lifted his fork.
Shall we?
Chapter 15. No, I'm not exaggerating. I am fairly certain this is the best meal I've ever eaten in my entire life. Granted, I'm generally a fast food girl, so I'm not a very sophisticated judge, but I also mean what I say.
Well, that's a lovely compliment. Thank you.
What is this again? She poked her fork at the dessert on her plate, wishing she had a tiny bit more space in her stomach. She'd eaten herself nearly sick, but still she craved just one more bite.
Bananas Foster butter cake.
I mean... She went for it, ignoring her stomach and savoring a small forkful. Where did you learn to do this?
I took a few culinary courses in college. I watch a lot of the Food Network on the weekends, and I practice when I can afford to.
Time amazingly well spent. I think you might have missed your calling, though.
I worked in a few restaurants back in the day. It wasn't conducive to a social life. When I was dating my ex, well, she wasn't a big fan of the schedule. My day job gave us more time together.
Not everyone would make the sacrifice.
It wasn't one, really. Working with the kids always felt most important. I loved it. And it wasn't like I couldn't cook at home, so I got both for a while.
Then you stopped?
He sighed. Well, when Lainey left, I didn't want to fight. I let her have whatever she wanted.
Alex